That looks like we're getting big time. So we were going to talk about fire today. So this was our little instrument out there in the wilderness. We actually had two of these, and I'm pretty sure it was not us. It was really our equipment that was the problem. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it couldn't have been us. But anyway, we were out there, and that's what was supposed to make the fire start, just that. That looks like it should start a fire, right? So we were doing this for 6 hours out on the mountainside. And I want to, before I get too far into this morning's message, I want to welcome everyone. If you're new, you're wondering what in the world's going on with all of our set. By the way, they did a great job. Would you guys agree? Can you give them a round of applause real quick? What a transformation in a week. If you get a chance, when you walked in, that was very similar to the shelter that we lived in for 6 days. So give it a try. Go ahead and lay down on the logs and just ask yourself if you could do that for about 8 hours. And I will assure you, you cannot. And so what we had in our minds back in October is we dreamed up an idea of a survival-esque series. And we thought we'd pick a place. And really, this was in the makings for about a year. But we kept on talking ourselves out of it. Because we were like, you know, I mean, this could go really bad. I mean, you know, I mean, we could invest all the resources and then really we could fail. And then, you know, would it be worth it? And so it finally came down to it. We were in the car one night with some of our men's team and they were like, man, I just say we do it. And then we're like, yeah, we're going to do it. And so the next thing you know, we're on the side of a mountain. And the trick of this whole survival series was there was no food, no water, and no shelter, and we only had a handful of primitive items, a pot to boil water, fire starting, flint and steel, and you know, one shotgun shell per day, and a hand fishing line with a hook tied to it, and that was pretty much it, a hatchet to hack down trees. And so that was what we were allotted, and we were going for 7 to 10 days. We only made it 6, but I'm going to tell you, it took all of our effort to make it all 6, okay? So the point many people ask, you know, why in the world would you do this? Because I think apparently the average person thinks that this is crazy. And so the thought was this. We are at Genesis Metro, we're all about adventure. I mean, I guarantee you, there's not a church that is willing to do more adventurous things than Genesis Metro. And what we've learned is that if we can capture some of these things, this experience, through the power of technology, that we can share those experiences, and they have an incredible impact, because you can see literally a picture and the practicality of what it means to live on the side of a mountain beyond your limitations. We were so far beyond our limits that I couldn't even tell you. I mean, you could, like in the rearview mirror, it wasn't even a dot way back there how far out of our comfort zone and our skill set. I'd love to tell you that we went through like a week's or a month's worth of training, but we didn't. We just watched YouTube videos, folks. That's what we did. We watched YouTube videos, and the rest was just, you know, just figure it out. And so we got out there, and the first thing we want to talk to you about today was the fire. Today we're going to talk about fire is life, and how important it is that in a camping situation. If we didn't have fire, we didn't have anything else. And so we got out there, and what we thought was going to take us about 20 minutes ended up taking us the better part of 6 to 6.5 hours, okay? And it was getting fairly intense about hour 3 or 4 as to whether or not we were going to get it started. And so today, before we get into the text and the message and everything, I wanted you to see when we finally got the spark that lit the flame. And we had several flames, but then we were unable to harness it. And that was even more of a tease, right? Because it was like, what just happened? What happened? And then everybody's an expert, by the way. You get 6 guys on the side of the mountain that think that they're not going to live or get fire or drink water or eat something. And the next thing you know, people are yelling at you. You know, they're like, you blew on it too much. You didn't feed it. You didn't give it enough oxygen. As if any of us knew what we were doing, okay? So everybody was getting to be an expert really quick. And so finally, it lit. And we didn't get the capture of the moment that it ignited. But I want you to know that we did it just like you saw here. But what actually happened was, over the course of 6 hours, we kind of gave up on shooting a continuous video because we didn't think that it was going to happen. And so we were trying to like stop, start every time we had a chance. So we didn't get the original ignition. And I will say that there might have been some that said, you know, in the background, we had a lighter for emergency purposes, and we had a flashlight for emergency purposes, we had Gatorade for emergency purposes, but we weren't allowed to touch or use any of that stuff. But there was some rumblings, I will tell you, I'm not gonna name names.
Like, Tim, they'll never know if we lit it with a lighter or not.
One guy might have even actually got the lighter out, and behind me, while I'm feverishly working on trying to get this fire started, they built a little kindling and started lighting it. They're like, look, I got fire, Tim. Teasing me. I'm like, shut up. We're not going to use that. And so when it finally sparked and it finally ignited, this is what happened. Watch this with me.
We can keep doing this all day as long as we keep going.
Oh, it's coming.
Hold on.
You're blocking me.
It's okay.
Hello.
All right, hold on. No.
Move it.
Blow, Eric. Yeah. Blow. Okay, watch out. Quit putting on top. Build a teepee around it. Hey, don't blow anymore, man. Can we get in there?
All right, let it go for a second.
Okay.
You can calm down a little bit on that.
That's good.
I mean, just give it a little steady.
Yeah.
It's, you don't even need that right now, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's going now.
Okay. We don't use anything.
We took us 6 hours, but we made our first fire. I don't know if it's primitive. We used a flint. We didn't use a lighter. We did it as primitive as we possibly could. It was much harder than any of us could have possibly imagined. I know this, that when it comes to fire out here, fire is life. Without fire, we can't boil water. Without boiling water, we can't make food. We can't do anything without fire. I hope today that we could talk about whether or not you have a fire in your life. I can tell you, yes, it deserves a round of applause. When you see idiots accomplish something good, you're just like, they achieved above their aptitude. And so I'll tell you how insecure we were about this fire. For the next 6 days, that fire did not go out, okay? No matter where we went, someone stayed with the fire. Or if you ventured out, someone was always within 10 minutes of the fire because we were so fearful if it went out that we wouldn't get it started again or we'd have to go through that whole process again. And so the fire, needless to say, was important. It was kind of interesting, the effort that it took, because at one juncture, because there's usually two guys that were working on the fire and everybody else was kind of making camp. And so once again, no food, no water, no shelter. By the time that we got through the six-hour process, the framework of the shelter as you see it out here was largely finished. And the water, we'd even got it in our pot, and it was sitting there waiting to be boiled. And firewood was actually gathered enough for the whole first night. There was only one thing we lacked, and that was the actual fire, okay? So it was like we had everything else that we needed to survive the first night except the one thing that we really needed, okay? And so I wanted you to see some parallels as we walk through this and some interesting things, the way that God has symmetry in timing. So this was back in October that we shot this series, and we entitled it at that time Beyond Limits. Little did we know that in the ensuing months, a church was going to approach us about the possible purchase of our facility and that would allow us to accomplish our long-term vision of moving to El Dorado, just west of here. And so it's I don't find it to be coincidence. I find it to be somewhat sovereign in nature that we entitled it Beyond Limits. Because right now, the thing that we're filling out, we did a vision night Friday night for all of our men and Saturday night for all of our women, and we're trying to figure out what God is wanting us to do. And we know that we have limitations financially that would say, undoubtedly right now, in the numbers, that we're roughly $1 million short of saying, yes, we're going to pull the trigger, we're going to do the deal tomorrow. And so God loves to allow us to get in these situations where there's a God-sized gap. And right where your limitations end is where a limitless God is able to begin. And I hope that this series speaks to us on so many levels, on a personal level, on a collective level, and then on a kingdom level. And I want us to talk about how God often typified himself or used the medium of fire. In the Old Testament, we even see so many times, I don't have time to name them all, but when Moses was out there waiting direction while he was shepherding in the desert, how did God appear to him? He appeared to him in a flame, right? A burning bush that began to speak to him. And what did that fire say? It gave him direction on how to set the people free. We see in the New Testament that God said in Hebrews that he was a consuming fire, representing how he delivered the law in the Old Testament. We also know that whenever it says, Jesus said, you're going to be baptized, not only with the Spirit, but with fire. And so fire is an incredible, important aspect to the Christian faith as to how God typifies himself. And so I want us to look at a macro template verse, and then we'll kind of dive down into it as to the application. And I want you to see that I think you're gonna see on so many levels how this applies to your personal life, but to where we are as a church body. Again, embrace and celebrate with me that this was done well before the circumstances that we are currently in. If you don't drink that in, then this isn't gonna mean as much to you today. So in Exodus chapter 13, we are on our way out. We've crossed the Red Sea, and now God's going to lead the people, and he describes how he's going to lead them, which is with his presence typified or symbolically manifest through a cloud and a pillar of fire. It says, and the Lord went before them by day in the pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they may travel by day and by night. In other words, God was making it to where there was going to be continuous movement. That when he was ready for them to move, there was going to be no reason for them to stop. There was going to be no concern for them to wait or to prolong or procrastinate. And so it says in verse 22, the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. So in other words, as they were going through this whole process, there was always the presence of God. Always the presence of God, trying to lead them from the prison that they were in Egypt to the promise he had for them across the Jordan. So today I think we want to dive into what the fire meant. What does it mean that fire is life and that following after the fire is so important in our lives? So when we look at the mountain experience that we had, fire was important because fire leads us, all right? Fire was going to lead us to our first drink of water. Imagine working out on the side of the mountain, clearing trees, building a shelter, and you really don't know what you're doing, so you're probably exerting more effort than what you probably should be. I can dare say we exerted much more effort than we thought we were going to exert building the fire. And so we're down in there, you know, and we're frantic and all that stuff is going on. And so you're using all this energy and you can't just go to the refrigerator, you know? You can't just go get a drink of water. And so you know that you got to have this in order to get to that. And so here we were and all the guys were getting, you know, thirsty, and it was the fire that was going to lead us to our first drink on the mountain. It was the fire next day that was going to lead us to our first meal on the mountain. It was the fire that was going to get us through and lead us through the first night on the mountain. And I'm gonna tell you something. When it gets dark on the mountain, it's a little different than dark in your neighborhood. I'm gonna let you know that. It was a new moon, which means there's no moon. There was no stars. When you got out 10 foot outside of our fire, you were in darkness. I'm not talking like a little bit of light. I'm not talking about you could, nothing, darkness. And I'm going to tell you, there was stuff out there that could eat us, okay? There were bears, there were mountain lions, there were coyotes, there were hogs. First day, within 20 minutes, When we walked out on our campsite off the path, that was about 20 minutes hike into the mountains, Hollis almost stepped on a copperhead. I mean, right there, boom. It was on the, in the crevice of these rocks laying there. And I'm going to tell you, you know, it'd have been tough. We'd have to finish without Hollis, you know. He'd have died out there, you know. Now, Eric, you know, did make the comment, well, at least we'd had something to eat. But that's terrible, right? That's terrible. Eric said that. Not Pastor Tim. And so there we were on the mountain, knowing that the fire really was the key that unlocked all the doors that were going to allow us to survive. And I thought, man, that's pretty practical, right? That God's fire unlocked all the doors to the prison that the Israelites were in. That if we would follow the fire in our personal lives, that we could get out of some of the stuff that we're in, and that we could get into the promise that God has created before time even existed, and he has anointed it, and he's prepared it, and if you could just get in the light long enough, he says that the word will be like a lamp unto your feet, a light unto your path, that he goes before us, so the footsteps would be illuminated for you to step into if you could just follow the fire long enough. And so I want to encourage you to think about that. That was our experience out there on the mountain. And we saw some practicality in relationship to the Israelites. Let's kind of look at their experience with following the fire. You know, whenever they moved out of Egypt, there were a lot of difficult decisions that they were faced with. And it's the fire that allows us to navigate through all the twists and turns, all the choices. I would love to tell you that living the Christian life, that every time you're presented with a dilemma, that there's a neon sign, and God is like yelling at you, this way, right here. But is that the way it goes in your life? I'm going to tell you, if you think that because I'm a preacher that that's the way it goes in my life, I'm sorry to disappoint you. Maybe I'm not as spiritual as you think I am, because there's a lot of decisions where you're really just like, man, you know, we really need God to show up here. And what I've learned is that I pray like this. I acknowledge before God oftentimes that I am really dumb. And so I say, God, you know how dumb I am. So this is where I feel like you're leading me, and I'm going to start moving in that direction. And of course, it's within the framework of his will and his word, and so he's never leading you to sin or anything like that. So within the framework of his will and his word, you start moving in a direction, and I pray, God, if this is not the way, you know I'm not smart enough to know, so I need you to close the door and make it evident to me so that I don't waste your time and so that I don't waste my life. I encourage you that once God has given you a direction, that you need to start moving, okay? You need to start moving. And if he doesn't want you to keep going that direction, he will make it clear. But many people, I fear, are like the Israelites. You come to a decision, and the only time that they really, really messed it up, right? The macro mess up, if you will, of their journey was when the fire came to the moment where they had to move in the face of great adversity. Giants were in their path on the side of this mountain, and the fire directed them, moved in front of them and said, this way. And they decided, right, they decided to stop. So the fire said, move, and they refused, and they stopped. And the moment they stopped, they got stuck. I mean, stuck, not just for a little while. They got stuck for 40 years. I want you to consider for a moment, I think a lot of us can relate to this, that once in our lives we can think back and we can think, man, I was really excited. I mean, maybe it was back in some other time frame, another church, maybe it was in this church, maybe it was last year, maybe it was at a camp, maybe it was at a retreat, maybe it was at a men's study that everybody got real excited and you were following the fire. And man, when you are following the fire, is there anything better? Is there anything better? I'm going to tell you, for the people who were here this weekend, Friday and Saturday, we were right in the midst of the fire. I mean, man, it was hot in here. And so here we were worshiping, and God was committing his presence to us. Everything was exciting. There is nothing better than being right in the middle of God's will, following after his presence. But if you ever decide to stop, If you ever say, you know what, God, I know that's where you want me to go, but I like it here. I want to play it safe. Man, for those of you that are stuck today, did you think you would be in this, whatever your this is, did you think you would be in this as long as you've been? Because I guarantee you, most people don't. Most people don't think. They think, oh, I'll stop for a little while. I'll stop for a little. As a matter of fact, you know, whenever you see these, like, World's Strongest Man competitions, anybody seen these, right? Like, these guys, I mean, they work out. They carry this stuff. I mean, it looks, if you go with me to the gym, a lot like what I work out with. And so they're carrying these huge boulders or whatever, and they start going, and you, like, see them start to wear down eventually when they... And people are like agging them on, because the thing is, once you're carrying this heavy load and you stop, it's so much harder. It's so much harder to pick it up and to start again. And there's even a place, right, where your body wants to stop and your mind has to will your body past the moment where it wants to quit, past the moment where it might even be reasonable to quit. If you want to know what following the fire is, it means that in the face of adversity, when there's a God-sized gap, when there's every opportunity for your intuition to kick in and in the natural mind say, no, 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 no. Surely God is not leading me into the place that will cause me to sacrifice. Surely God is not leading me into a place of danger. Surely only God leads me into the place where it's comfortable, where I'm blessed, where I have my Snuggie with me. And so some people, that's the way you look at the way your faith should be, and yet that's not biblical at all. Find me the people in the Bible that just had that life. You won't find it. I don't know where in Christianity that this snuck in as like the goal, like if you have enough faith that everything's going to be great. No, if you have enough faith, everything's probably not going to be great, because you're going to be walking in the face of danger. You're going to be in the presence of giants, and the only way that you can overcome is that you have to follow the fire through the dark times. And so here's the great news. Where one generation fell, another generation had a choice. I want to share with you just a little bit, break this down, go a little bit deeper. This generation of Americans, I don't even care where you're at on the age range, because it's probably true no matter what I say, but I believe that this generation, when you look at the way you were raised, and you say, you know what, I'm going to model my life, and then you try to look around, and you say, where is the template for a godly marriage? Where is the template for godly parenting? Where is the template for a church that is like the one in the Bible? And I think that most people would be hard-pressed to think of the number of friends that you have and go, you know what? I want, like that guy right there, that girl right there, that couple right there. You know what? I can follow in my parents' footsteps because they gave me the perfect godly example. I'm going to say, that's a rarity. That's a rarity. I grew up in a non-Christian home. I mean, I had never been to church a day in my life. And God sent my basketball coach, who was a student pastor, by my house when I was 13 years old to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the first day that I heard that Jesus Christ could save me from my sins and grant me eternal life and redeem me and give me purpose beyond what I could ever imagine. I mean, when you really think about it, it's a pretty good offer. Would you guys agree with me on that? Can I get an amen on that one? Yes. All right. So there's no, I mean, who has a better offer for you than that? I mean, you can't find it. And that day, I got on my knees in the living room of my house. The first day, I heard the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I accepted him as my Savior. And I want you to think about that, because that's kind of what motivates me to reach people that are as lost as I was that day. And so here was this generation that had watched their parents stop. And their parents got stuck. And their parents lost their way. And here this generation got to make a choice. You see, whatever you were raised in, you are not doomed by. You can make a different choice than your parents made. Some of you, You're a yeller because your mom or dad was a yeller. You're a nagger because your mom or dad was a nagger. You're a spender to the point that you don't have any money in the bank and you're living paycheck to paycheck because your mom and dad did the same thing. You're a hoarder. You're not generous. You're not gracious because you're always thinking, man, a rainy day is going to come, a flood's going to come, and everything's going to be taken away. So you live a stingy life. You know where you learned that? Most likely, your parents. You might even be a person that was raised where mom and dad were one way on Sunday, right? Your mom and dad maybe was the people that took you to church, and they were worshiping God, right? And it's the same dad that when you got home and something small went awry, the next thing you know, your dad's punching you or got you up against the wall or demeaning you or telling you how of little worth you are. If you're not careful, you'll pick up the same torch that your parents laid down, and you'll carry your life into a place of stuck. The good thing is the Bible gives us an example that a generation rose up and chose a different choice. And God delivered them out of the prison and into the promise. Consider that for a moment, that if you could follow the fire in your life, that you can make a difference. You could change your family line as a result of your choice to follow fully the fire as it leads you into the unknown. Man, I was considering not only how the fire affected the Israelites, I was thinking of the fire in relationship to Genesis Metro and kind of where we're uniquely positioned now and some of the decisions that we have out there on the horizon. And we talked about this weekend. It's always nostalgic. And I realize our church is growing to the point where, you know, sometimes I think, well, I don't want to tell our story again. And then I realize like half the people in here, they don't know the story. And so we were talking about it this weekend and we were considering, Carrie and I, as we were getting ready, like, you know, it's been 12 years now, 12 years. And, you know, I'm 40 years old now. I told Carrie, we're going to blink, and I'm going to be 50. I can see it coming now. And when we moved here 12 years ago, we were kind of looking at the landscape. And much like the Israelites on a parallel plane, we were in a denomination that was a prison. It was a prison. And they had lost sight of the main thing. And the main thing for churches, now you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. All right, it is about people. Jesus Christ said that he came to seek and to save that which was lost. Are you included in that? I was lost. I don't know if you were ever lost. If you were born righteous, then you were dismissed. You may leave the building now. But if you weren't born righteous, if you were born lost, then Jesus Christ came to seek and to save you and me from my sins. And I'm going to tell you, you need a Savior to save you from where you're at, and to deliver you from the prison, whatever it is, we'll get to that in just a moment, to your promise. So here we are, and what Genesis Metro is about, it's about people, because Jesus Christ was about people. Now, some churches, we get off into brands and denominations and causes, and I'm not against a cause, it just has to be in the kingdom. I mean, yes, we want to do good things, but more than good things, we want to do God things. And church really, sometimes it devolves into knowledge gatherers. I want you to know that I want you to know the Bible. But my goal is not to raise up the best theologians in the world to the expense of being about people. Now, why do I say that? The best theologians in Jesus' day did not even know who he was. The best theologians who knew the Bible better than anyone else had gotten so wrapped up in their traditions and in their theology that they missed the point of the exercise. Don't let your Christianity ever become about gathering information to the exclusion that you forget about the mission. The mission is the people. If your Christianity isn't influencing people, you are doing it wrong. God wants to use you to be his light, his hands, his feet to a lost and dying world. You have the opportunity every day to carry out the mission of Jesus Christ. I encourage you to follow the fire. So there we were. And I had been preaching since I was 16, so that made it 12 years in that denomination. And I was 28, and one thing that you'll notice that when God gets ready to move, when he gets ready to move you out of one thing and into something else, there becomes a restlessness, a holy discontent, if you will. And the Israelites, they were in slavery for 430 years. And all of a sudden, there became this restlessness. And they began to cry out to God. They said, God, deliver us. God, deliver us. And it says that the cry of the people rose to the Father, rose to the throne of God. And he heard their cry. And he began the process of delivering them. When we were out there on the mountain, I'm going to tell you, 5 hours in, 6 hours in, there was a bit of restlessness. Yes, there was. People were thirsty. They were looking at me. My job was the fire. I thought that I had picked the easy job. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really want to gather wood. I really didn't want to build a shelter. I thought, fire, boom, done. 6 hours later, you know, it was insane. And there was a restlessness. And when that fire sparked off, and then you heard it, you saw it, you're like, blow, blow, blow. That was what we reduced to, okay? If you want to know the genius, it was like, blow, blow, blow. That was what we had, folks. We didn't have anything else. But, you know, if it started to go out, just blow harder. So there we were, trying to get this fire built, and there was a restlessness right before the move, right before the transition. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know what? God is probably trying to make some of the people in this room restless. Restless. Because you've been stuck in whatever you've been in for a long time. Stuck on the sidelines, stuck living in the middle, one way on Sunday, different way on Monday. You know, you want God, but you want him on your terms. And he's always pushing the boundaries of your faith, wanting you to acknowledge that there's a place that he wants to take you that is greater than what you can accomplish on your own. And so here he is, and his people are inside of this prison. I want you to consider this for a moment, that you have to grow weary of being a slave, that you have to grow weary of being in what you're in, to the point where you call out and you say, God, deliver me out of this prison. Deliver me out of the... And consider this, it was all that they had ever known. It was all that they had ever known. I mean, they couldn't look back to the day when they were free. They couldn't look back to the generation and say, oh, well, they had. No, 430 years, and all of a sudden, restless. Consider that for a moment. Some of you have been living in what you've known all of your life. And you could have this temptation to deceive yourself into thinking, well, this is all it's ever going to be. But what if I told you that God was bigger than what you're stuck in? What if I told you that God was bigger than the system that you were born into? That you don't have to stay there, that if you would grow restless to the point that you would cry out to a holy God, say, God, deliver me out of this prison, that he's already prepared the promise. Now, what's between you in the prison and you and your promise? It is a fire that you're going to have to follow fully if you want to make it to the other side. But you're not going to ever get out until you begin to cry and say, God, deliver me. God, deliver me out of all the things that I've ever known, and deliver me into what you have for my life. One of the things that Carrie and I learned through this past 12 years is that, man, if you're going to follow the fire, I'm going to be honest with you, it's tough. It's tough. When we moved here 12 years ago, we didn't move alone. We had a team. Man, we shook hands. We prayed together. We cried together. We committed. Through thick and thin, no matter what comes, blood, sweat, and tears, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to tell you, all the people we started with are gone. If you think following the fire doesn't come with a cost, then you're foolish. If our faith was predicated on people around us never leaving, we would have never got to this moment today. You have to be willing to bear the weight of the people around you. Consider on a weekly basis, the staff of Genesis Metro, leadership of our church, deal with heartache after heartache, broken marriage after broken marriage, children going astray and parents not knowing what to do. If you want an easy life, you can't follow after the fire. If you want to jump in and be used of God, get ready for it to be messy. Because people come to you as they are, broken, full of sin, full of burdens, not knowing what to do. So what motivates people to press and to follow after that fire? Even when people leave, even when people betray, and with heartache all around you, what is it that drives the person who's willing to enter into the promise? We all know this truth. We all know this truth. And it's the same truth that was on the mountain out there. Night is coming. Night is coming. The anxiety level that occurred in hour 6 was directly proportionate to the fact that we had about an hour and a half of daylight left. And no matter what we did, we couldn't stop the night from coming. We worked as diligently as we possibly could, and we gave everything that we had to get that fire started, because no matter what, the night was coming. And I'm going to tell you, when you're out there on the mountain and the night comes, if you don't have a fire, you're exposed. Whatever's out there, they all are afraid of fire. The mountain lion, he's afraid of the fire. The coyotes are afraid of the fire. Snakes do not like the fire. Nothing in nature likes the fire. Do you know what helps us? The fire. When you go out there and the fire isn't lit, you are exposed. So whatever it is that wants you in the middle of the night, you are exposed. You can't see. There is no warmth for the cold that begins to set in. Jesus encountered a blind man, and he began the process of giving some great lessons to his people about sin and whether sin caused the blindness. He said, no, is that the glory of God may be revealed. And then he healed the man, and he looked at his disciples. He said, we need to work and do the works of God while it is still day, because the night is coming. What did he mean by that? He meant that there's coming a day where that day ends and the night begins. And when that night comes, there is no tomorrow. You see, for those that are lost, there is an ultimate night from which there is no return. When they slip from this life into the next without Jesus Christ, there is no return from that night. They will spend eternity separated from God in a place called hell. And I'm going to tell you, what motivates me is not that you become a great theologian, but that you receive the burden of Jesus Christ to reach and to save and to seek that which is lost. Because when the night comes for them, there is no dawn. Man, if I could give you something today, I would give you the burden of Jesus Christ to a lost and dying world that saved a 13-year-old, that saved wherever you were at, that led you through your darkest hour, that saved your marriage when it was on the brink, that brought you back from your addiction, that set you free from a church of legalism and allowed you to see that there's freedom in Jesus Christ. I don't know what he's given you, but I guarantee you it was better than what you had before. Understand that he gave it to you not for you to consume it. He gave it to you so that you might give it away. Give it away. As we move into 2015, I don't know where we're going, but wherever the fire is, I'm going to follow. I hope that we'll find people that care enough about the fire and care enough about those that need it, that they'll join us. Join us in the process. I can tell you this, God doesn't want you to be stuck in 2015. And the only way you're going to get out of where you're at is for you to finally get restless, discontent, cry out. And then when he reveals himself, you better stay close. You better stay close. Once that fire is alive, man, don't let it go out. Don't move away from it. You better gather some wood during the daytime, because I'm telling you, the night is coming. It was 12 hours of darkness out there on the mountain every night. Man, I'm telling you, night is coming for your marriage. Night is coming for your kids. Night is coming for your finances, and what you do during the day, how you prepare, will determine whether you make it through the night. Would you guys stand with us? We're going to have a time of worship and commit this message to God. We're going to sing a song called With Everything, and I think that's appropriate tonight, today. I pray that in this moment that you might call out to God. If you're stuck in here this morning, you don't have to leave here stuck. That you would call out to God in this moment and say, God, deliver me. Deliver me from all that I've ever known. Deliver me from the comforts of my selfishness. Deliver me from the prison of people's opinion about me. For those of you that are adults, I want you to consider, is your life making a difference with the people around you? For the teenagers, how many of your friends would be here this morning if you cared enough just to send them a text or to pick them up on the way to church? Oh, we can all make a difference so easily, but it starts with being restless with the souls of men that are on the verge of slipping into the night. Oh God, help us. Help us to be the light.